Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to start off by answering a question that we received about good new restaurants in town as well as in Clovis. Then we're going to go through some of the headlines from this past week. We're going to dig in to the two stories that Fresnoland covered about Clovis this week, one about emergency services and then the other about the Clovis Community Hospital. And then we'll close with what we're loving this week.
We received a new question from one of our listeners online who asked, where are the fun new restaurants opening up around town? Jordan, you know, where are they?
There's a lot of restaurants opening up constantly. There's a lot of churn in the restaurant industry. Something I'm excited about, though, is this Third Place Global Eatery that just opened in Clovis. And I like the model because a lot of restaurants have a hard time. Overhead is expensive, food costs are expensive, and so one of the ways that some restaurants cut costs is by operating out of these marketplace or mercado-style setups where you have a bunch of different food vendors in one location, and then you can kind of food court-style wander around. I actually haven't been to the Third Place Global Eatery, but lots of people have been recommending it to me, and I really love the concept.
Yeah, it's a fun concept. I know I've been to a lot of these types of food halls in other cities, and we've been trying to make one happen in Fresno for a long time. So Clovis beat us to the punch, but good job, Clovis. It sounds like fun.
Before we move into our bigger story about Clovis, we wanted to cover a few headlines that were in the news this week. Today, that we're recording this, is Friday, August 9th, and it's the deadline for filing for local office for election this fall. Donnie, what are some of the challengers to our incumbents that we're going to see on this ballot?
Two of the big races that a lot of people are watching locally here in Fresno County are County Supervisor District 2, where Fresno City Council member Gary Bredefeld is putting in a pretty significant challenge to the incumbent, Steve Brandau. District 2 is the district that sort of represents Old Fig Garden, roughly. It's a really close race, although Gary Bredefeld has definitely outraised Steve Brandau. So we'll be following that more closely this fall. The other one is County Supervisor District 3, which is about downtown, central Fresno, southwest Fresno, bits of southeast. In that one, you have Fresno City Council member Luis Chavez that's running against the incumbent, Sal Quintero. Luis actually used to work for Sal, so they have a long history, long relationship. It's really interesting to see this challenge, but you have a lot of the local labor groups that are lining up behind Luis to see if he can oust Sal. So that'll be a big race for us to follow.
Is it common for city council people to want to run eventually for county supervisor positions?
Yes.
Why is that?
A lot of our politicians in Fresno tend to keep trying to find the next biggest job they can find. Luis started on the school board. He was a Fresno Unified trustee before he went to the
city
council.
So it's part of the ladder for them.
It's part of the ladder. Yeah, okay. Part gotcha. Of the responsibility. And it's, hey, I've done my time at the city council. I know how this thing works. Mm-hmm. Give me a bigger budget, more responsibility.
Okay. We also have an update on the camping ban. What's happened since our last podcast?
Yeah, so the Fresno County Board of Supervisors moved forward on the first version of their own version of a camping ban, which they say doesn't target the homeless, but anyone who is camping in a public space is basically going to be penalized if they are found doing that, if it passes. It's going to go to get final approval on August 20th, and then it'll start getting implemented about a month later. So if people are homeless, sleeping in public spaces, they should expect to start seeing some consequences by the end of September.
And I've seen a lot of groups online organizing informative meetings and resistance efforts. What are the reactions to some of this that we're seeing?
Yeah, a lot of folks both in the unhoused community advocating for the unhoused community, as well as some of the service providers and people that work with people who are homeless, are really concerned that this type of regulation, depending on how it's implemented, could be really harmful for people who are unhoused. Some of the shelters are full. Some of them may not be safe for people that have kids. Some people don't feel safe at the shelters. Some people don't refuse shelter for a lot of reasons. And so there's a fear that this is just going to move people constantly around the city without actually solving our homelessness problem. I have to just keep saying that this is not something driven by the city or the county. This is driven by a Supreme Court decision. And the governor, our Governor Gavin Newsom, is really on board with this approach. He even held a press conference this week reminding cities and counties that if they don't really step up action in getting rid of homeless encampments, so he's going to start taking their money away from them.
That'll motivate them.
That will definitely motivate them. I don't think that we had a lack of motivation in Fresno County and city that much, but definitely losing funding will make them move faster.
And then final, in terms of our headlines, we also had an update on an affordable housing project in Fig Garden. What's going on there?
Yeah, so on the same agenda where the supervisors discussed their camping ban, there was also a resolution that was intended to initially poll support from the county for an affordable housing project in Old Fig on Shaw and Glen Avenues that had some housing units that were actually supposed to be for formerly homeless people. Some people definitely had a perception of not only are you going to make it almost impossible for people to sleep in public spaces, but you're not going to support the very types of housing that should help people. There was some confusion. There were some questions. Needless to say, the supervisors reversed that initial resolution and they've given a funding extension for the developers to figure out how to put their whole capital stack together for that project. Mm-hmm. So we should get an update in the new year on that.
We know this podcast is called Fresnolandia, but this week we're going to be covering Clovis because they've been in the news quite a bit, in particular two stories that were covered in Fresnoland. The first one's about a public safety tax to preserve the Clovis way of life, and that's a quote there that came from the fire chief in Clovis describing kind of the dynamic and the fork in the road that Clovis is facing. So let's go back to 2000. Clovis experienced a financial downturn that led to the laying off of 10 to 20% of the police force as well as firefighters. 15 years later, public officials say they're experiencing a safety crisis. What's going on in Clovis these days?
Yeah, it's been interesting to follow the Clovis City Council to hear what they're perceived and what their issues are with public safety. And so Clovis has been growing for a long time. It surpassed Fresno in terms of being one of the fastest growing places in the Central Valley and also in California. And with growth comes responsibility. It becomes more homes that have to have fire, police protection, more homes that have to be belonging to a school district, more homes that need roads built next to them. There's a lot of infrastructure costs. And as Clovis has grown, their police staffing hasn't grown, and they've had the same number of police and fire staff on board with the city since about 2007, stayed at around 2007 levels, and they're now feeling a crisis. The president of the Clovis Police Officers Association told the city council at their most recent meeting that this is not the same Clovis as I grew up with, quote, I recently spoke to a validated criminal street gang member. Fresno gang members come to the city of Clovis because it's safer to hang out and party in Airbnbs, end quote.
So gangs also like the Clovis way of life as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a universal embracing of that way of life.
Okay. Can you put on your urban planner meta hat for us and talk about how do cities traditionally pay for increased services, infrastructure when they grow?
So it's tricky. So in California, we have interesting municipal finance because of a little thing called Prop 13. Which passed by the voters in 1978. It was part of an anti-tax revolt. And it's the thing that if you're a homeowner, locks your property taxes in to only increase at 1% a year. It's a beautiful form of rent control, mortgage payment control if you're a homeowner.
It's also a tax break to homeowners.
A tax break to homeowners, absolutely. I'm a homeowner. I absolutely benefit from Prop 13. And what it meant when it passed is that cities who rely pretty heavily on property taxes to fund services lost a huge revenue source. And so as Clovis's property tax rolls have been growing because they've been adding all these homes, property values in Clovis and also in the Central Valley have gone up so much since the pandemic, they're not necessarily getting, they're definitely getting some increase in their property tax rolls, but not enough to absorb the cost of all of the growth and all the people that are coming in. And so it's this perpetual issue. Oh, how do cities pay for new firefighters, new police? And part of it is that sprawl spreads people out. So when you have more people spread out across a wider area, it's just harder to serve than if you have people more concentrated in a smaller area. And in Clovis, they're saying that emergency response times have really increased for people who live on the most further edges of the city in Loma Vista and in Harlan Ranch. And that's just because it's just so big. There's just so much area. It just takes longer to get there. The police chief was talking about how in Loma Vista, which is the area by Clovis East, they've only built out 60% of the new homes in that area. And so they haven't been able to, every time a new home gets built, they pay what's called like development impact fees. Mm-hmm. And those are the fees that developers pay that go towards building new fire stations, new police substations, new roads, new parks, new schools. And when you build new developments, because of Prop 13, developers have to pay these fees, and you have to have critical mass of development in order to get enough fees to be able to have enough money to build a new fire station. And because development happens in waves, depending on the economy and what's happening there, when you have only 60% build out of a new community, you don't have the revenue you need to build the fire stations, but you have the people there. And that's what you're seeing in Clovis, is you have Loma Vista doesn't have a fire station. The roads are often just two lanes wide. They're not your standard, what you would see in a subdivision of four lanes. And that's because there's not enough impact fees to go into the piggy bank.
And so what is Clovis trying to do?
So Clovis has been debating, what do we do about the situation? For the last 2 years or so, they've had a lot of committees put together to tackle this public safety issue, and they've decided that they're just going to go to the voters and get a sales tax approved, and a 1% sales tax. So it's a significant bump for the city of Clovis. It would, if the tax does pass, it'll be on the November ballot for Clovis residents. It'll put the city of Clovis tying for second for the second highest tax rate in Fresno County. It would make Clovis taxes higher than Fresno taxes. And sales taxes are a pretty common way for cities to solve this public safety crisis. There's many cities in Fresno County that already have a form of a public safety tax. Kingsburg has one. I believe Kerman has one. I believe Mendota has one. I can't remember all the other ones off the top of my head, but it's pretty normal. But Clovis's general fund at the same time also, which their general fund is most of the money that comes in from property taxes, the lion's share of that already goes to public safety. And so I think there's some questions that people have about, okay, we're already putting most of our property taxes to public safety, and now we're going to put a lot of our sales taxes into public safety. At what point is there going to be enough funds? And do we need to have some conversations about, when growth is not paying for itself, what do we do? Or do we build denser to consolidate services to make it more efficient to provide those services? Judging by how things generally go in Clovis, I don't think there's going to be a really positive conversation towards density.
No way.
Yeah, but that's the... Those are the conversations that cities are having across the U.S. to tackle this problem, and certainly in California, where we have Prop 13, and it forces the density conversation in a way that you might not need to if you lived in North Carolina and or Texas, certainly, and your property taxes were going up quite a bit every year, but also paying for those services.
Yeah, so Clovis is just going through the stage that you experience when you exponential growth, and you need to pay for that growth.
And we've had that. Clovis isn't unique here. We've had this in Fresno, and it's not uncommon for the taxpayers to have to bail out new development at the end of the day. And in Fresno, one of my favorite stories I like to tell is how there, before the 2008 recession, there was a huge building boom in Fresno, and many subdivisions got built west of the 99. And of course, once the recession hit, no one was building anymore. And there wasn't, again, enough critical mass to have the impact fees required to build the fire station needed to make sure that people had fire protection west of the 99. And so for, I don't know, 12 years, 10 years, the fire station operated within a tract home in that subdivision, or one of the subdivisions west of 99, until the city council, gosh, maybe 2020-ish era, finally said, okay, fine, we'll use some of our general fund, which is, again, property tax money that comes from everyone in the city, to make sure that there's a fire station west of the 99. So these types of bailouts are normal.
Yeah, and I feel like there's two different stories going on here. There's a story about making sure that there's enough emergency services for a city, But then there's also a story about Clovis changing. Mm-hmm. And that's what you hear in the quotes, the direct quotes that you got from people living there. Because I don't think the Clovis way of life is just about emergency services. I think they're talking about the city changing.
Clovis is a large city. And again, they've surpassed Fresno in terms of growth rates. And they're a much more diverse city than they used to be. And there's a lot of perceptions around Clovis being a majority white city. And I believe the most recent statistics on Clovis show that it is not a majority white city anymore. And that is both a really positive thing for Clovis because for a long time it has been an exclusive place for only affluent people. And there's been litigation that has shown that Clovis has in sometimes deliberately racially excluded people from living there. And so it's a very welcome change, and a lot of residents are really grappling with what that looks like.
Another story coming out of Clovis this week is a new lawsuit that says Clovis Hospital siphoned $1 billion, and that's billion with a B, away from Fresno's downtown hospital. Who's bringing this suit, and what are they claiming?
So the suit is coming from two Fresno nonprofits, Cultiva La Salud, which is like a public health-focused nonprofit, and Fresno Building Healthy Communities, also pretty public health based. And they're basically saying that Community Health Systems, who's like the parent company to Clovis Community and Community Regional Medical Centers, took public funds, a lot of that being Medi-Cal, and diverted those funds that they got from those that were meant for those patients and diverted them to basically building out their Clovis facilities and towards more wealthy communities. About 70% of CRMC's funds, according to the lawsuit, are public funds. And it's basically a lawsuit about misuse of funds, taking money meant for poor people and diverting it to wealthy neighborhoods.
So who's making these decisions? Who's allocating funds? Who determines where funds go to? Because it's part of a network, right?
Well, it's Community Regional Medical Center, okay. And they have, I think, two or three other facilities within their network. But they're a nonprofit hospital system. They have a board of directors. Yes, they receive a lot of public funding, but they're not a public agency, and so they're not accountable to the public in terms of how they spend money in the way that a public agency might be. Part of the lawsuit raises the issue that 6 of the 14 board members starting in 2009 for Community Health System were either developers or directly had connections to a lot of suburban home developers who had land holdings just near in and around the Clovis Community Hospital area. Granville Homes was one of the developers specifically mentioned in the lawsuit. And so there's a lot of questions about conflicts of interest. And I have to say, a lot of this was already explored in a pretty lengthy 4-part investigation that the Fresno Bee did, Yesenia Amara with the Fresno Bee did 2 years ago, that sort of first started sounding the alarm about the misuse of public funds and the way that developers have potentially influenced that expenditure to serve a private interest. Yeah. I also have to say, so the lawsuit got filed in court on Wednesday morning, and our reporter who covered this, Juliana Moreno, reached out to Community Health Systems, and they said the lawsuit was baseless. It's a waste of their time to be spending time on this. But they do have 30 days to respond.
Okay. And I want to make a broader context here. This Clovis spending public dollars on increased amenities is not unusual. Hospitals across the United States are increasingly focused on services and amenities. There are places, hospitals that advertise the thread counts in their sheets. There are hospitals that have Michelin star chefs. I even read about a hospital that has a concierge service, so you'll know the best restaurants in town when you come to visit their hospital. Some hospitals are even hiring chief experience officers, which help craft experience while you're spending time in the hospital. It's just different ways of marketing medical services, so you can charge a premium. Hospital executives in a Boston Globe article said one of the main reasons that hospitals have moved in this direction is that people's expectations are changing. They want a premium service when they go to a hospital. And by offering a lot of these amenities, you can create a competitive advantage.
It both blows my mind to hear all of these things, and it's not surprising at all. And we see some of this reflected in our own local community. We covered pretty extensively Madera Community Hospital shuttering last year. And something that was interesting that came through in the reporting last year around that hospital was a lot of the initial blame when the hospital shuttered was that Madera Community Hospital serves a lot of Medi-Cal patients, and they were saying it wouldn't have shuttered if the reimbursement rates that the state gives to the hospital for Medi-Cal patients were higher. And that was a common narrative. And then we dug deeper and learned that they were actually charging private insurance patients less to maintain a competitive advantage because they wanted to keep the private insurance patients there instead of competing with St. Agnes or Community Regional Medical Center or Clovis Community or Kaiser. And it tracks with hospitals are going to do whatever they can to keep the private patients there.
And we bring this up simply just to say that Clovis is not unique. Unique in this approach to marketing themselves, trying to appeal to wealthy patients and patrons. And it's something that people look at when they move to a new community. What's the hospital system around here? It's something that they think about. But I would prefer if our hospitals were focused on more granular patient outcomes. How long you have to wait before you can have a surgery, for example. How long it takes to process a patient in an emergency room. Those things are not sexy, but they're the things that make the biggest difference. I would love if there was a beautiful piece of wall art in my room when I'm recovering from a surgery, no doubt. I would love to be given a plate of foie gras when I'm sitting after my surgery, but I don't think it is necessary. But I will say I'm guilty like the rest of them. In 2018, I broke my femur while I was skiing in China Peak. And when emergency services, and they had to drive an ambulance up to China Peak, which was fun. When they got up there, they asked what hospital I wanted to go to. And I was still relatively new to town. And I said, I don't know, what would you guys recommend? And they said, yeah, go to Clovis Community. And I said, okay, yeah. And I had decent food and an enjoyable experience. But for me, it was just a means to an end. It wasn't an end of itself. I didn't go there to seek the amenities. I went there to have them fix my bone and then leave.
Right. I've given birth twice, so I have thoughts about hospital stays. I've had two of them in the last few years. I'm a Kaiser person. Kaiser was totally fine. I had no complaints. It wasn't fancy. It did the job. I was comfortable. And I think the other thing just to say is we live in one of the poorest regions in the U.S., in which health outcomes consistently translate to lower life expectancy. And the things that you're talking about in terms of how long are you waiting in the ER, what's your wait time to see an actual physician, the quality of care, like those are often the things between life and death for people, or furthering a chronic condition or getting treatment for that. And so it's such an important issue for so many people in our community. And I really hope that we can see some resolution here.
One of the things that Donnie and I discussed before this podcast, and a few friends also mentioned it, was this Pawnee Eagleton conversation. For those who haven't seen the show Parks and Recreation, it takes place in a small town in Indiana. There's this divide between Eagleton, which is this kind of Clovis-like community, if you will, more high income. They have lots of services. They love dressage. And then you have Pawnee, which is a more traditional town with some of the issues that a lot of cities struggle with, poverty, health outcomes, all those kinds of things. And at a certain point in the show, Eagleton runs out of money. And so they have to come to Pawnee to get support. And Leslie Knope gives a presentation for how they intend to bail it out. And her first slide says,
well, well, well. You blew it. Super hard. Complete buffoonery. It's hilarious and you deserve it.
And I thought about that a little bit while I was researching this hospital lawsuit this week. But at the end of the day, I think, like in the show, while it is fun for some people, especially people in Fresno, to dance on Clovis's grave when they have issues or struggles or challenges, it's more important to be together and to look at a holistic picture of what's best for the region. What about you?
Some of my best friends live in Clovis, and Clovis has some good restaurants that we talked about at the top of the podcast. But so full disclosure, I used to work for the city of Fresno, a decade ago. And I'll never forget when I worked at the city, there was this joke at City Hall about how there was so much pressure by the development community, by business community, to just be like Clovis. And if Fresno could just be like Clovis, we would be a better community. So much so that one of my bosses joked one day in a meeting, maybe we should all get bracelets that say, what would Clovis do? And I just thought, and Fresno's always had a chip on its shoulder about Clovis. And I'm a chip on the shoulder person. Mm-hmm, I just own that.
Same.
I grew up in a farming community, and so I didn't grow up in Fresno or Clovis, didn't really have a dog in the fight when I was a kid, and not until I moved back to Fresno as an adult. But it's hard to not, to feel for Fresno. Obviously, I live in Fresno, so I'm going to feel a little bit more sympathetic to Fresno in these situations. But it's hard. I'm just going to say that.
So please email us if you're interested in what would Clovis do bracelets. Is that something we can work on, Donnie? I think that would really take off. A little bit like those tacos and trinkets t-shirts that we saw at Art Hop. Yeah. And we're going to close today with our favorite segment, which is what we're loving this week. Donnie, what are you loving this week?
So I got back recently from the best digital detox resort that you will ever find.
Did you not take your phone?
I did take my phone, but okay. It didn't work there.
Oh, excellent.
It's called, ready?
Yes.
Camp Fresno.
Oh my God. Tell me more.
Okay, so you wouldn't, I never heard of Camp Fresno until just a few years ago. And again, I didn't grow up in Fresno. I grew up just outside of Fresno. So I think it's something that more people who are from Fresno specifically perhaps grew up with. But nonetheless, it's so you go to Shaver, and then when you hit Dinky Creek Road, you take a right and you go for about 15 or 20 minutes. And so it's out there, and there's all these cabins, and they're very rustic. Let me underscore rustic.
Like horror movie rustic, or not quite there?
No, they just need some love. They need a new paint job. They need better insulation that doesn't look slightly creepy. But there's beds, there's a toilet, there's
maybe
a sink.
Maybe we can get some of that Clovis Community Hospital money up there.
Seriously.
Add some amenities.
Host their exec retreat there, and then the upgrades will happen a lot faster. But it's so lovely. And cell phone reception is non-existent. I went with a bunch of friends and all of our kids. We all got a bunch of cabins that shared the same campfire. It's lovely. It's right next to Dinky Creek. Highly recommend.
Okay. So what's nearby? Can you go to rivers? What do you do when you're up there?
Yeah, it's literally right next to Dinky Creek. And so just...
The best creek name ever.
I love Dinky Creek.
Yeah,
and
best
name
ever.
I grew up going to Dinky. I have lots of fun memories at Dinky. And at Dinky Creek, just about a mile, maybe a mile up from Camp Fresno, is these natural rock water slides.
Oh, I've heard about these and I haven't done it.
They're really fun. They're scary, but they're really fun. Highly recommend swimming pools. You can jump into the swimming pools. It's super fun. Camp Fresno is on the same road that takes you to McKinley Grove, which is like an old grove of giant sequoias, very old. So that's really beautiful. And of course, Shaver is 25 minutes away.
That's amazing. I need to go. How do you go to Camp Fresno? What's the process?
The city has a reservation page on their website. And yeah, you just go there and you reserve it. I think it's $120 a night. So it's super cheap.
No, it's not super cheap. But that's, I mean, if you're looking on Airbnbs for a cabin, you know, it's probably a lot more than that. It's probably obviously less than just tent camping, but you still have to reserve a campsite for that.
One of the things that interests me was that one of the people that worked at Camp Fresno was telling us that they try to be protective of making sure that city residents get first priority to reserve the cabins first, because people from the Bay Area have discovered that there's no cell reception there. And people from the Bay Area like their digital detox resorts.
Oh, my God.
So
take your digital detox to Santa Cruz. All right. So what I'm loving this week is something that's flown under the radar in the news cycle, in part because we've had the Olympics and there's lots going on. There's obviously a presidential election that's in full swing. Is the release of some reporters from Russia, one in particular that's I've watched and observed the progress in the story, Evan Gerskovich, who is a Wall Street Journal reporter, and there was recently a prisoner exchange, if you will, and we got Evan back as well as one other journalist, I believe. And it's just really neat because we were all transfixed during the Brittany Griner a situation where she was charged for bringing edibles or something with her in her bag, and then she was going to serve a crazy prison sentence for that. But it's great that we got her back, but Evan Gerskovich has been there for a long time, and there just hasn't been the same interest in that story. And so it's wonderful that he's coming home, and it's wonderful that the United States pursues people that are falsely imprisoned across the world. I think it's one of the most beautiful things to, like, you know, spend federal government resources pursuing to help one person, in this case two. But I thought that was a really heartwarming story of him being able to
truly
come home.
Wild that a journalist was jailed for doing their job. I know Russia is a special place. I'm really glad to see him come home.
Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.